It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 699. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. The name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and also facebook.com/MikeTechShow. The show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at MikeTechShow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial or go directly to InstantHouseCall.com. Going to summarize what tonight's show is going to be. Then I'm going to talk about something personal that's happened, and then we're going to get into the rest of the show. Tonight, we're going to talk about my back-end email hosted exchange provider is migrating some of my clients from a server platform that will not be supported in January, and we're going to get into some end-of-life of some Microsoft products. And so we're going to talk about what I've been doing to handle those migrations. Untangle sent me an important email that I'm going to read about some of the versions of some of their products that are going to be that you have to do an update. I got a couple stories from the trenches and then some listener email. And that's the show for tonight. I want to start out. I literally just now, before I'm starting, going back and forth text messages with one of my bigger clients that had a laptop problem. They're going to be here in a half hour. They're dropping off the laptop. It's an emergency. This past Sunday, I was going to edit and post show 698 from a couple weeks ago. And I was getting ready to edit. And all of a sudden, and this is late afternoon, early evening, my son, I hear yelling. He hears water coming down in our bedroom, in the master bedroom. And my wife and I go running up, and water, when I say there is water pouring down from the center of my ceiling onto the bed, it is brutal. And she quickly grabs an empty trash can and puts it there as it starts to fill up. Now, with my broken foot, I can't navigate to the attic, which is above us. My son goes up to the attic and he yells at Daddy, says, it's all filled with water. I shut off the air conditioner. So here's what happened. The air conditioner, the condensation that's supposed to go into a drain, that drain was clogged. I learned that later that evening. And then the emergency pan underneath fills up with water. That overflowed and started hitting the wood and going in and then now coming through the ceiling. My entire master bedroom is ruined. We're talking ceiling, everything. So I don't sleep Sunday night. I have literally an HVAC emergency. They're literally still, you know, sopping up stuff at midnight. And I'm not going to go too long on this, but let's just say I don't sleep until Tuesday. Tuesday afternoon, I finally get a point where we have plastic on the mattress and then, you know, the water stopped and everything. And I just need to lay down and just take a nap. And then I can't make this stuff up. Half the ceiling falls down on top of me while I'm trying to take my first nap. Welcome to my week. It has been a house nightmare here, and that is what has been delaying everything. As a matter of fact, I had to cancel and bail on a Tuesday night planning session for the upcoming TechCon Unplugged, which before I get into the tech details of tonight, that's coming along great. And man, we are like within 40 days of TechCon Unplugged. If you don't have your tickets, you need to grab them as soon as possible at techconunplugged.com. It's an incredible conference that we are putting on in Grand Rapids, Michigan, September 20th through the 22nd. Go to the website. You'll see the content. Join me there and your other favorite podcasters. We're going to have a great time. The sessions are incredible. We have great speakers, great tech. You will come away with improving your business or bringing more value to the company you're working for. I promise. I hope to see you there. Exchange 2010 is end of life, January 14th, 2020. So Microsoft will no longer provide technical support and problems that occur and also security updates. So anybody that's hosting Exchange and they're on 2010, those companies have to migrate. Now, I have half a dozen clients on Exchange 2010 through Sherweb. So Sherweb sends an email to my client if they're going to be doing upgrades to move their mailboxes to Exchange Server 2019. I get it. They have to do it. They want to do it before the end of the year. And almost every week now, for the last few weeks, I have a client or two being migrated. What does that mean, being migrated? Well, I have to time doing the DNS changes. When you set up someone's email, just a few things here. You have to set the MX record, the SPF record, and the auto discover. I am going to quickly go over those different settings. I had it at a specific time change the MX record. I'm going to have links to describing this. An MX record, I'm going to assume most of you understand, but I'm sure some of my audience doesn't understand that. And these are records that handles where to send mail from the domain name service. Where should mail go? I look at the MX record as a traffic cop and actually directing the mail to where it should go. So with Sherweb, their mail servers are changing. So I got to change the MX record, we'll call MX1, and the backup record. Most places you should have two MX records, one for the main server that all mail should go for that domain. And the second one is a backup in case that first one's down. So hopefully there's some load balancing or a server farm with that hosting provider. The next record is AutoDiscover. And there's two ways that that can be communicated for the AutoDiscover. This is the place that you gotta reference in the DNS as to how mail clients will get configured. If it's an A record in DNS, then it's an IP address. If it's an actual URL or an actual website, then it has to be given a C name. So when you're editing DNS, and this is something if you do what I do and you are doing any kind of tech support, you need to understand all these records and what they do, because that's important if you ever have to make that change or if you're involved in any kind of a mail migration. You got to be familiar with all of these references. AutoDiscover, the IP address is changing. The MX records are changing. And then there's another one, which is SPF, Sender Policy Framework. And this is a text entry in the DNS, and it's an email authentication method designed to detect forging sender addresses during the delivery of the email. So it's a way to avoid email spoofing. And it's almost like a double check to verify, depending on who you're using for spam filtering or just in general, your email host provider on receiving email. It is important that you have an SPF entry in the DNS. And again, I'm going to have a Wikipedia link for that. Now, I'm also going to have a link for the differences of an A record, a C name, an alias, and URL records. I found a really good simple link where an A record maps a name to one or more IP addresses. when the IP is known and stable. The CNAME record maps a name of to another name. So, example, if my email has a website to go to, I could put a CNAME reference. So for like online webmail, I could have email and then the website where mhsconsulting.net, where we get our email. And I have such a record. So if I type email.mhsconsulting.net, then it'll go right to Outlook Web Access for SureWeb. And then we can log in. You can have any kind of a CNAME reference going to another website. You use the A record for IP addresses, and that's basically the difference. Over the past couple weeks, this is what I've been doing. In the middle of the migration, when they pick a day when they're going to migrate, my clients will get a notification, a little pop-up, asking them to allow the auto-discover because they're making changes. You have to click Don't Ask Me Again and click Allow. So once I know the day they are going to be migrated, the day before I send out instructions. I have a canned email that I send to all the users that states what they should do, what they should be expecting. If they have a mobile device, any type of phone, Android, iPhone, or iPad, then they need to know the new server name. So I send them that. And most of the time, they're going to ask for help and where do you edit that server name? So I make sure, hey, reach out, call us, and my son and I take care of it. As a matter of fact, my son had to hit the client today that was being migrated because the owner has an Android and he could not find where to edit that server. So my son went over there, showed him how to do it. I'm managing this. I think I only got two more clients and they're going to happen next week. And then we got this handled for everybody that is migrating away, you know, that the hosting provider is migrating away from Exchange Server 2010. Now, at the same time, I looked at this and wanted to know, okay, when is Outlook 2010 going to be end of life where there's no more security updates? Because I have a large portion of my clients on Office 2010. Because a lot of them haven't pulled the trigger for Office 365 yet, which this is going to force their hand. But we have a little more time. And that's what I wanted to let everybody know. Office 2010 reaches its end of life October 13th, 2020. So we still have a little more than a year to go with Office. And I'm so glad because right now I am knee deep in migrations of Windows 7 to Windows 10. Anybody that's got Windows 7, they have till the end of the year so they can get migrated. If they're in any kind of a medical office or financial situation where they're financial advisors, they will not be FINRA or HIPAA compliant if they are still running Windows 7. Someone in the chat, Dexter, says Office 2019 will not work with Windows 7. I did not know that. Now, I got to admit, I have 2019 running on two test machines just to see the difference. But most people are running Office 365, which is still Office 2016. And you won't have a problem on Windows 7. I have a lot of clients still with Windows 7 that, you know, they're going to be migrated and they are Office 365. But I didn't know that Office 2019 will not work with Windows 7. That's interesting. So thank you for that. And that's why I wanted to share that as soon as I read that in the chat. If you're going to support email and email migrations and Outlook, you got to have a handle on DNS because that is the key to mail working and not working. AutoDiscover, MX records, SPF records, you need to completely understand that. Interesting, we're getting a little discussion in the chat about Office 2019 and Office 365 and Office 2016. Because of the end of life of Windows 7 coming upon us, if you had to roll out 2019 in an office, I would say, look, we have to go to Windows 10 first, if that's the problem. Do I like that Microsoft forces that? No. But you're so close to Windows 7 not having security updates, I guess I'm less annoyed at that. And I would leverage that to then upgrade the clients to Windows 10 and then roll out Office 2019 if that's what's going to be rolled out. Let's move on to Untangle real quick here. I want to read this because I have a few clients of Untangle and now I got to schedule this. We have an important notice regarding the web filter and web monitor apps for Untangle NG Firewall. Customers are encouraged to upgrade to Untangle NG Firewall version 14.2 to take advantage of the many benefits of this new release. Now, this is an Untangle forced upgrade because one of the things they have is they want you to get to the latest version. So they are ending basically the older versions of Web Filter and Web Monitor by the end of October. So I have a couple months to hit all the Untangles, and that's not bad. Actually, I think I got two of them that don't even have to be upgraded. They are at the latest greatest. So some of the benefits of this new version: ability to flag, block, or alert based on search words on Google, YouTube, Ask, Bing, and Yahoo. Enforcement of safe search for YouTube. YouTube usage can be locked down to show only content that meets the safe search criteria. This is interesting. Enhanced malware detection with an even greater percentage of the internet categorized to block more attacks originating from web browsing. So I kind of like this. These are Untangle's moving further and further into doing more for protection, and I like that. It goes on, as part of the enhancements in Untangle NG Firewall version 14.2, we have implemented URL categorization powered by Webroot BrightCloud. This replaces the same functionality provided by Zvelo in previous versions. So they now have new licensing, so that's another reason. As NG Firewall upgrades, web filter categories will be automatically mapped from the categories that were used in prior releases to their equivalent categories in 14.2. Right now, until October 30th, we need to upgrade to NG, to the version, firewall version 14.2. One of the things to upgrade, it's very easy to back up your configuration file in Untangle. Untangle has something really nice. Their facts and their support, the knowledge base online, is very detailed. One of the things you are armed with exact instructions, procedures, step by step of what you would go through in order to preserve a backup. Even if things blew up, I could reinstall the latest version from a USB stick, activate with my password and for the client, and then make sure that to upload the config, and we're up and running. So it's not difficult to do these changes as long as you're ready and you've done the preparation. And before I do an upgrade, you make sure you have a great backup of the config. It's very simple. You just go on a browser from your laptop or desktop computer that's on that network. And when you get to the admin panel, it is very simple to back up the config. It takes like 15, 20 seconds, and it's a small file that you would then use if you had to reinstall everything, and then you can easily upload it. Important, and I'm really glad to see a lot of options and more features in blocking bad content for companies. This is why I use Untangle, where others use SonicWall and other things. For my primary firewall that I want to see in place is an Untangle appliance running the latest, greatest, with all the software updated, doing all the web filtering, doing intrusion detection, intrusion prevention. And if you want to play, what a great reason to learn all about this. It's free. Now, the subscription of some of these, I'll call them apps, are not. And you have to have a yearly subscription for the software, but you can play with a trial version of the big apps, but there are light versions of each of these that are free that you can play with by just downloading. You just need an old computer system that has two NICs. I highly recommend the Intel dual NIC in your system, and then you could get that in a low profile or regular. It's inexpensive for the card, and then you have an inbound and an outbound, and it's just a Linux distribution. You can build on a USB stick and easily install it on any system, and I think this is a good training ground for you to offer more services, and you've heard me talk about this a lot, but I wanted to bring it up because anybody that's managing Untangle, you've probably received this email that is notifying you to do this upgrade. So I will be making sure all my clients that have this, that it will be upgraded. A couple stories from the trenches. Last week, a client got back from vacation and their house took a hard hit on power. I don't know if it was a direct lightning hit because the garage door opener didn't work. One of the TVs, their whole house took a hit, and so did the main computer system. One of the things that we had to do this week, because when they got back, they needed to order another computer. My son went out. We couldn't get it started. The computer was old. So we guided the client, and they have their own little business operating out of their home. And this is a retired couple that has a business. I recommended what hardware to buy. They bought the computer. My son spent most of Monday, take the drive out of the old system, connect it, use Fab's Auto Backup 7 Pro. I remoted in to help with some of the configs to change it, use an instant house call, of course, and transferred all of the data. We had a reinstall Office. We reinstalled all of his apps. He's up and running and, you know, connecting them to the printers and everything's working. His Comcast router took the hit. So he was totally down, no internet when he got back. Devices and things throughout the house not working. Now the insurance company gets involved. This, I would believe, happens. A lot of you see this where I'm doing a custom invoice where my time, or I should say our time, MHS Consulting's time, is a separate invoice for work involving the power problem that they can submit to the insurance company so they can get reimbursed. The same with the hardware, anything else that's failed, and things that have been replaced. And it's interesting when you're at a home, something came up. If it's the personal insurance, then certain things are covered. If it's the business insurance, then that's the computer and the computer time. And I don't believe they can make a claim on both. And that's very interesting because I have business insurance here that covers this room. And covers my, and not just this room, but then it's also covering my son and I when we go on site to other clients. And I have business insurance, which is interesting. A new client just asked for proof of my insurance. So I got to contact tomorrow my insurance agent to send the proof, a certificate of insurance to a new client. And I probably got like 6 or 7 clients that every year they need annual proof that I have my business insurance, which I gladly re-up every year because, and it's not cheap. And I have to have that because I can't walk in the door for some clients without that insurance. So it's interesting if you have a home-based office and you have a problem as to what insurance is going to cover what. Now, I am lucky that my business insurance, my homeowners, my auto is all with the same company. I'm only allowed to have an umbrella policy. I don't want to get into a detailed insurance discussion, but I have an umbrella policy covering just the personal. The business is not under the umbrella. And an umbrella policy, and you can just Google this, it's coverage beyond the normal policy. God forbid I'm in an auto accident, someone dies, and I'm being sued for $2 million or my wife. That umbrella policy would cover that, where if you had a typical auto insurance policy, it would not. There would be a limit, and then you would be personally liable. I may not be describing that best, and it's always best to get the advice of a real insurance agent that's what they do for a living. But I wanted to mention that because with all these power issues that we've been dealing with, some of them are causing grave failures that are costing lots of money that you will absolutely have to file a claim because it's way beyond the deductible. Like my bedroom and the leak and all the remediation of that and what has to happen. It's terrible. And that's why we have insurance. And then you just got to worry about the deductible. And then keep in mind, if you're unhappy with your insurance agent in terms of the claim that's happening and you're not happy, that's what public adjusters are for. So the lessons, understand what is covered for all of your insurance, whether it's business, whether it's personal. Make sure you understand what's covered, what's not covered. Ask the tough questions, and if they can't answer it, then it's time for a different agent. So make sure you have a deep understanding of that, so when disaster hits, you're not going to have a problem. I just got back. I had to take a little break during the podcast. My client delivered the laptop, and she's texting me the password, and I'm going to work on that tonight. So it looks like I have something to work on. I always have something to work on. All right. This is a set of three emails in follow-ups to some previous topics from one listener, and his name's Doug. This is the first one. You may have already have answers to the following, but I thought I would send anyway. One, in describing demoting workstations, and this is for show 697, at time index 1231, you said when you finished with migrating the first profile, you unjoined the domain. I actually probably stated that wrong. I did it all in one step with a checkbox, but he brings up a good point. Why not migrate the other profiles before unjoining the domain? That could be my mistake when I read this. There's a checkbox to unjoin the domain. I should have converted the profile, rebooted, ran it again, converted each of the profiles, and then maybe on the last one, pick unjoin the domain. That actually might have worked. But you know what? Knock wood, you know, I have not heard from that client for any problems regarding the demotion of those workstations. Two, laptop battery not charging. I have this happen occasionally on a couple of my own HP laptops. I have always been able to solve it by shutting down the computer, restart into CMOS setup just to avoid loading Windows, then unplug the power supply. Even though Windows reported 0% charge, there should still be enough charge to keep the computer on for a while. Well, that's not the case in the ones that I've been seeing. Leave the computer until it dies, then plug the adapter in. Leave the computer off until the battery has a chance to reach full charge. Then start the computer with AC. Check charge state, then test charging capability. Actually, I usually discover the problem while the battery still has significant charge. So I will play one or more movies on battery power to wear it down before I do the CMOS bit. So great tip, something else to do before pulling the trigger on a new battery. I solve the problem, but I've done a bunch of things and have never been able to recover the battery or recover the charging, and a new battery fixes it. Except for my Surface Pro 3, which I am still so mad at Microsoft because that battery has to be replaced. And Microsoft is the only place to do it, and they want $600 to do that. So I have a perfectly good Surface Pro 3 that cannot hold a charge that needs a new battery. And the only way to do it is to send that to Microsoft, pay a ridiculous $600 charge to get a new battery. This is from Doug. Regarding Word 365 previewing, I have had similar issues, but maybe not identical, and resolve them. Here are some troubleshooting methods that help me locate the actual fix, but I don't remember all the details. Once you find something that works, you may have a better focus on what to search for in Google. If the files were created in an earlier version of Word, which they were, you save as from Word 365, maybe even change the file name. Copy the file to a local drive and see if the problem persists. If that resolved the issue, share the file, the folder to another workstation and see if it works. Don't be too quick to dismiss that the solution may be an adjustment or update on the server side. Office 365 may assume you are using current version of server. Now, there's no real server in this particular environment. It's a peer server. Check settings in Word Trust for allow documents on a network to be trusted. Check for residual Word temp files in the folder from an old version of Word. Macros, enable all macros as a troubleshooting step. Doug, you gave me some things to try here that I am absolutely, they did move from Office 2013 to Office 365. So I am going to do that, and let's see. His last email, and this is really good. This was the one from show 697 where a client has two cameras, and what do you do if the ports are the same? This may be a day late and a dollar short. Nope. And I think this is the way to handle it. Assume a public IP address for the router. And he assumed that. Assume IP camera 1 is an IP address. Assume IP camera 2, another IP address. Assume both cameras listen on port 80 and cannot be changed. Configure port forwarding on the router as router TCP port 7777 forwards to camera 1:80 and router TCP port 8888 forwards to camera 2:80. See where we're going here. So from outside, you would type the public IP address, colon, and those ports. So here's the thing. On the port forwarding, it depends on the router. This is a great, clever solution if you can forward from one port to another within the router. Not all routers allow port forwarding the same way. So I think this is a great, elegant solution to a camera that has any devices that have multiple of the same ports that you need to reach from the outside. Brilliant little solution if the router supports you to be able to forward that way. Doug, thank you so much for your emails. That is it for tonight. The best way to support the Mike Tech Show and Tech Vets, Carrie Holzman and myself, we share an Amazon link that's in the show notes of every show. And we also have that on tech-vets.com. Before you add items to your cart, click on that link. It'll bring you back to Amazon. Then do your search for the items, add them to your cart. When you check out, we will get credit. We get a small percentage, but your price stays the same. This is the best way to support the show, to support Carrie and myself. We thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for your continued support. Also, Instant House Call. Go to instanthousecall.com, download the trial for 15 days, use the promo code Mike Tech Show. And also, don't forget, use FABS Auto Backup 7 Pro for transferring all your settings and data from one system to another, from one operating system to another, especially now with your migrations to Windows 10. This is a lifesaver in software. That's it. We'll see you next week for show 700. I don't know what I'm doing yet, but I'll come up with something. So show 700 next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.